Blog Talk Radio.
Whole lot of radio.
But you're not a barber. You don't know about mixing lather and mug with a brush and everything. Oh, Clef, that's such a nice sound.
He's pink. He's kind of pink. It's Floyd. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Oldie Tiny Radio Show Bajillion, I guess, or so. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by
Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and of course Goat. And the three of us are here with
Dale says it's a conspiracy.
It is I, Guy the Ghost, label.
It's conspiracy. Conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy.
Yes.
Gosh darn conspiracy.
It's spelled CONSPI apostrophe I. CY. Conspiracy.
You forgot the silent Q.
Yeah. And sometimes
there's always a silent Q. If it's a good conspiracy, there's always a silent Q. Yeah.
Yes. The silent Q is absolutely mandatory.
But
in most North American classrooms.
But how do you know what's there if you can't hear it?
I don't.
Well, what it does is it confuses the socialists.
And the typesetters.
Yeah.
So, we got a whole lot of radio. And
whole lot of radio.
About the great Floyd the Barber. No, the actor who portrayed Floyd the Barber on Andy Griffith. It's Howard McNear's 118th birthday?
118. 118, which means if he were alive today, he'd be dead.
Yes.
Does he still have his teeth?
The worms.
I think
do.
A family member does. I think a family member
have
does.
To dig him up to find out. Huh?
Yeah. No, he played characters nothing like Floyd the Barber. On old-time radio, which is, of course, how he jump-started his career.
Yeah, actually started off in vaudeville. Vaudeville. Good old vaudeville.
He was a dancing girl. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Jeez.
He was a dancing girl? Oh, my goodness.
He
was rather small. He couldn't wear a tutu. He had to wear a 1-1.
Yep. Hey, Gigi.
It was all about them legs.
GGSI paper in the house. Howdy, 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 right back at you.
See, Dale, he had the legs, but he confused everybody with that mustache. It was a conspiracy.
Conspiracy, absolutely.
That, he was only like 8 years old in vaudeville, so that mustache also confused them with that too.
Yeah,
he never got carded in the bar.
They didn't have child labor laws. They were conspiracy. you guys started this, boy.
You'll be sorry, Dale. You'll be sorry.
It was all my dreams, boy.
I already am. Howard's earliest film appearance, 1953, Escape from Fort Bravo as Watson, but he was uncredited in that film.
Right.
Well, that's fair. Sure didn't get his credit. He got a paycheck, though, right?
He got a paycheck. They gave him a lollipop. Said, get out of here, kid.
His last film appearance was 1966 in The Fortune Cookie as Mr. Simoli. Okay.
Is that the one with Jerry Lewis?
I don't know. The alternative, I don't think it's The Fortune Cookie that I think of.
No.
With Jack Lemmon. Its alternative title of this one was Meet Whiplash Willie. Whiplash Willie. Okay. Not some kind of alternative title.
He was in two episodes of Twilight Zone. One of the half-hour ones with Hocus Pocus and Frisbee with Andy Devine. And one in The Bard, which also had a amongst many people, it did have Burt Reynolds in there as kind of a Marlon Brando type actor, method actor.
Yeah. He even got on TV's Gunsmoke, not as Doc, but as Howard Rudd in an episode called Aunt Feedy or Aunt Feed.
Did you guys know that Nirvana made a song called Floyd the Barber? I'm scared to go check it out.
I did not.
That
would be wonderful. Yeah,
It says, bells on the door clank. Come on in. Floyd observes my hairy chin. Sit down. Chair, don't be afraid. Steamed hot towel on my face. I'm ashamed. I don't know, man. That's some weird stuff. It mentions Opie and Aunt B. Floyd the Barber by Nirvana. I've never heard this song, so I don't know the tempo or the melody.
And we're grateful. GGSI paper also reports it's National Bigwig Day, and so he tips his hat to the bigwigs. So that would be all of us, including CW.
Ow. No, my hair's real. It's real.
Okay.
It's also National Chocolate Cake Day. Ooh.
Yeah.
Cake.
I'm glad I didn't continue with the lyrics. They get rather disturbing.
Good. I hope it doesn't involve Barney and Otis. But in any event, Howard also appeared on a couple episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. He also was on Adventures of Ozzy and Harriet, The Donna Reed Show, Jack Benny Show, seven different times.
Yeah, I do remember this. He was on one of Boris Karloff's Thriller on Cousin Tundifer. I do remember that one.
And get this, on Leave It to Beaver in 1958, so this predates Andy Griffith, he played a character named Andy the Barber in an episode called The Shave.
I found information that hasn't been validated, and it says that Howard McNear, on his first paycheck, made three times the salary of Rin Tin Tin.
I think Rin Tin Tin got ripped off. He was an action star.
Well, it says later Rin Tin Tin sued, but, you know. there you go.
Do you guys remember watching the decline of Howard McNear on Andy Griffith at all?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, I didn't know that as a kid, but as I see him now, yeah, he had a stroke in 63 that left half of him paralyzed. He had to leave the series for like a year and a half until Andy Griffith asked him to return, they accommodated him. He couldn't even walk or stand.
So he was usually leaning, against him or usually sitting down, holding the newspaper in the hand that wouldn't move. I watched a couple of clips with him after the stroke, and you didn't notice it quite as much if you were just watching the show.
His speech, though, you could hear it.
I vaguely recall there was one episode where it looked like there was a puppet master up at top, and it had strings on his hands and his knees and his kind of weird. He walked real funny in that episode. But he did take, Andy. And I was like, well, that's McNear. All right.
It was unfortunate, but I think it was kind of Andy Griffith in the show to accommodate him, you know, towards the end of his acting career.
I understood that there was a lot of absolute support amongst all the people that were working on that program, that they really did get along well.
Except for Aunt B.
We know. You know, halfway through the series, she became a communist, and she had those tattoos, and it was horrible.
Yeah, it was bad. A lot of radio. We don't have the shadow tonight. We have Gunsmoke Who was there in suspense?
You're okay. You're testing me. So let me get the moral back up there. Where is it?
Where shall we start, gentlemen? We do have a lot of radio.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Whole lot of radio.
A whole lot of radio.
How so much radio? Let's do suspense. Your ears are gonna bleed.
Yeah, suspense is filled with intrigue, suspense, and the opportunity of a parachute.
Yep. And also has Parley Bear in there, who was a co-star with him. He was Chester on Radio's Gunsmoke, as he was Doc on Radio's Gunsmoke, Howard McNair was. So that makes it interesting.
Dave, you freaked me out. you told me earlier, yeah, man, this weekend it's a salute to Parley Bear. And then I saw Dale's post, and it's like, no, man, it's about Ted McNair guy. And I'm like, what?
Did I say Parley Bear? That is my bad.
So I was looking
I am so sorry. I'm
I went
so
looking
sorry.
About information about Parley Bear, and I was like, oh, wow, was he related to, Smokey? And he's not, and,
a ton of radio.
A ton of radio.
And we might as well start with suspense. It's called The Security Agent. And it was originally broadcast way back.
September 5th, 1956, in Kovis, Russia.
Ah.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you a transcribed story of Flight to Freedom. So now, starring Parley Bear and Howard McNear, here is tonight's suspense play, The Security Agent. The plan was almost laughable in its conception. The beginning was 4 months ago, the place Kharkov, Poland. There were two friends, Joseph Ostrovsky, a superintendent in the state bus works, and Frederick Zielonko, an executive of the state radio broadcasting company. Both were over 40, both unmarried. They met regularly on Saturday nights for dinner and an evening of chess. In May of 1956, on just such a Saturday, Zielonko was trying to maneuver Ostrovsky into a stalemate.
Well, clever, clever. You are learning.
Another beer, Joseph? Joseph. When is the last time you had cold beer?
What? Oh! I don't know.
If I had a refrigerator, we could have cold beer.
If cows had wings, they would fly.
At the trade fair in Warsaw, I saw refrigerators. Big, beautiful refrigerators. I wonder where they went. Who got them?
Oh, don't be funny.
It's all very well for you. You didn't go. You didn't see what I saw. I had to broadcast it.
I heard you weren't very good.
I'm not an announcer. I'm an official.
Do you or don't you want to finish this game?
I'm sorry. We'll finish. Joseph. Are you going to the mechanical exhibition next month, the one in Prague?
Not if I can help it. Keep quiet, will you?
I'm hoping to be able to go.
I don't like airplanes. Ah. Ah, now, get out of that.
I think I will.
Huh?
Get out.
What are you talking about?
Why don't you do it, too?
Do what?
Leave Poland.
You must be out of your mind. Oh, no, it's a joke. You're joking.
No, I'm not. I've been thinking about it for a long time.
Shh. Somebody might...
You don't have to worry. We're not being monitored. I'm clear with security, and so are you, in case you're interested.
Well, it must be the beer. You shouldn't drink so much.
I'm not drunk, and you know it. I'm sick of living this way.
Well, I'd rather not talk about it.
Why not?
Well, it's not healthy. The police have a way of finding these things out. even what you're thinking.
That's another reason to get out.
Oh, you've been working too hard. Things aren't so bad here, you know.
I don't know. Maybe I see and hear more than you do. Maybe I'm tired of rationalizing my life now compared to what I remember before the war.
Well, things will never be the same again.
Not here, maybe, but there are other countries.
I'm a Pole.
No, you're not. You're whatever they want you to be. Today, I'd rather be a Pole anywhere than in Poland. It makes me ashamed.
How would you get out?
The mechanical exhibition in Prague.
Well, things are no different in Czechoslovakia.
Supposing we fly to Prague, but never reach there. Suppose the plane were to land in Austria instead.
Oh, you're mad.
The idea only just occurred to me, but it is possible. Others have done it.
Flyers with their own planes, perhaps, but can you operate an airplane? Now, can you?
No.
Well, then...
We'd need one more. One more like ourselves, and I think I know the man. Three of us, with pistols, and at the right time, force the pilot to take us to Austria.
Oh, Frederick, no, no, no. That's a very bad novel.
I mean it.
Oh, three of us, you and I, and one other nameless idiot, take over an airliner in the air and force the pilot, and not to speak of the other passengers, force them to land in Austria?
We could do
it. Oh, you could do it, not me. I'll say prayers at your trial. And I'll miss you when they execute you.
I've considered that. And I think I'm willing to take the chance.
You're serious? You're really serious?
Yes. If I can get the opportunity to go.
Where would you get a gun?
I can get another.
Where?
It doesn't matter. I can get it.
But you and I, we're middle-aged. Young people do this kind of thing, but not us. It's too late for us.
Is it?
Well, all our lives, our work, friends, everything is here.
We could start again.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Talking as though we'd really entertain such an idea. Oh, now, come on, forget it and finish the game. Come on, it's your move.
A week later, on the following Friday, Frederick Zhilenko was called into the office of the manager of the state radio. The man's name was Kozun. He liked Zhilenko, and he offered his subordinate a cigar.
Zhilenko?
Come in, Kozun.
Zhilenko, I've had my eye on you.
Oh?
I've had my eye on you, and I've been wondering.
Something wrong?
You puzzled me.
In what way?
I've wondered why a man of your abilities, your obvious devotion to your work, had not become a party member.
Oh. Well, comrade, I'm afraid I suppose that I'm not well enough politically adjusted. Perhaps I'd rather others make the decisions for me.
It makes it a little awkward at this time. You see, there is the mechanical exhibition in Prague.
Yes, I know.
You are the logical man to send to supervise our broadcasts, but it's a question of sending you to Czechoslovakia, you see.
But, comrade, surely my record...
Oh, you've been cleared by security. No question of that, my friend. No. It's a matter of political expediency. A party member would make a so much better impression with our comrades in Prague.
Ah, yes.
On the other hand, there's not a man in the company with your qualifications to fulfill the task.
Yes, I can see it is a problem.
You understand that these objections come from a high source, and believe me, Zhilenko, they are not personal.
I believe you.
Therefore, if I am forced to assign another man, a party member, to accompany you, a man who is outwardly your superior... You would understand.
Well, I'm not sure.
Someone who can meet the officials in Prague. Someone who can speak as a representative of the state radio. Of course, the technical details would remain in your hands. The power behind the throne, if you will pardon such an expression. Between you and me, my friend, I would not blame you if you declined.
Well, I
think it over. Of course, it will do no harm as far as your future position is concerned, if you were to agree.
Well, have they someone in mind for the spokesman?
Vladimir Heletsky,
Haleski.
He is a party member.
Of course, I understand.
Think it over, my friend.
I have. I should be honored to represent the state radio and do my best in whatever capacity.
Your uncle, I salute you. I may add that you have saved my neck with those in higher places. We can be sure that in your able hands, the broadcasts will be successful. I shall make all arrangements. You and Comrade Haleski leave next week.
By plane, Comrade?
Of course, by plane. Our newest, I should say, our great neighbor's newest and best transport. Thank you, Zoranko. Thank you.
That evening, Zoranko called his friend Joseph Ostrovsky. They had not seen or spoken to each other since the preceding Saturday. But Zoranko had made up his mind, now that the chance of escape had become a reality. And he wanted Ostrovsky to join him. An hour later, they were together in Zoranko's rooms.
Well, all right, you wouldn't say anything on the phone. Now, what is the mystery?
It's settled. They asked me today. They asked, almost begged me to go to Prague.
Oh.
I leave next week. I want you to come with me.
Well, I'm afraid I'll have to, whether I like it or not. I'm representing the busworks at the exhibition.
You know what I mean, Joseph.
Yes, I know what you mean. And I've been thinking about it all week. I'd hoped you would have given up the idea.
Given it up? Oh, everything's in our favor. Now, you'll see. It couldn't be better. Do you remember I said we'd need three men to do it, to take over the plane?
Yes.
Well, we've got our third man. He's joining us here this evening. He should be here any minute. You will come with us.
I don't know. I don't know. I need time to think.
We can do it. I know we can.
Well, how can you be so sure? The risk.
Who would expect us to try something like this? And once we're on the plane... That's him. Say you're with us, Joseph.
Well, I don't know. I'm confused.
Come in. Come in, my friend. I'm glad you're early. We have a lot to talk about. Joseph, I want you to meet another would-be exile, the third member of our party, Mr. Vladimir Haleski.
You are listening to The Security Agent, tonight's presentation on radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. As attractive a lady as Justice may be, her efforts to solve the problems that arise when human beings live in close contact with each other might be conspicuously ineffective were it not for the support she receives from men of principle and courage who face danger on her behalf every day of their working lives. Tomorrow night,
Principal
CBS
Indiana.
Radio rings you in on another highly dramatic adventure of men who look trouble in the eye in support of justice, the men of 21st Precinct. Remember, 21st Precinct is a regular Thursday night feature over most of these same stations.
So, part one's building up the, if I dare say so, the suspense. Escape from Poland.
Here's the interesting thing I didn't realize.
There's an easier way to escape Poland, Dave. This could have been a lot shorter show. They needed to walk backwards and tell them they were coming in. And that would have...
Sounds like a certain nugget joke to me.
Yeah. Believe me, I heard my fair share of those as a Ute.
As a Ute. Hey, you know, the interesting thing is the third voice on here, the narrator throughout it, Mr. John Daner, was also a regular. Every week on Gunsmoke, he was either a good guy or a bad guy. So these three transported themselves at the same time Gunsmoke was running to this episode of Suspense. That, to me, that makes it kind of cool.
It is way cool. Trey cool.
I think they messed up when they came up with code names. One of them was Larry Lennon. I don't think they were going to get too far with that, you know.
Larry Lennon?
Larry Lennon? Are you related to Vladimir?
No, John.
Yeah, exactly. No, no relation.
Or Jack.
Yeah.
Or Jack Lemmon.
Or Jack.
Yeah.
Jack
Lemmon.
Yeah,
yeah,
there you
Jack
go.
Lennon? Is it Jack Lemmon?
Yeah. No, Jack Lemmon. Lemmon.
Jack Lemmon. Lemmon. And then the Lemmon sisters, and, you know, and then, right.
Lemmon sisters, yeah.
And we know that Howard had the legs for it, you know, so.
Oh,
Rin Tin Tin!
Hey.
Poor Rin Tin Tin. Poor Rin Tin Tin.
We all loved Rin Tin
Tin. Cheated again. Cheated again. All he got was some begging strips, you know. Begging,
right.
begging.
No, but last he got taken care of. Last he was in good hands.
Mm-hmm.
Old Rudd took good care of Lassie. Yep. Mr. Weatherwax took very good care of Lassie. He'd better.
Where else? Dale's coming for you.
Oh, no.
GG's hot paper, contrary to conspiracy beliefs, I don't wear a wig. And if I did, it wouldn't be big.
Yep, the good old big wigs.
It's National Big Wig Day. National Big Wig. Yeah, there we go.
Yep. And Fog's being Janice in the chat as well.
Yes.
Huzzah. Huzzah.
Huzzah. Huzzah.
Huzzah.
Gesundheit.
I know, yeah. That's what I get for gargling on air. Blah, blah.
I think you need to stop huzzahing. I'll have to get you a tissue.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Gigi Sidepepper says it's also National Chocolate Cake Day. So there's two things I can't partake in. Big wigs and chocolate cake. I'm sorry. I would go down the tubes right away. Huzzah! It flips his wig. You flipped your wig. You know, people can tell if it's inside out. You know, I mean, and it's more itchy that way, too.
That would be. That would be itchy, yeah.
That goony goo goo was that?
The computer's backfiring on you.
I don't know. I don't know what that was.
Let's wrap up.
Do you guys
the ice cream,
use...
Man.
Yeah, there you go. Do you guys use the term goody goo goo ever?
No.
I love that one. It was an Eddie Murphy skit. he had a cousin or something, and the guy he was claimed to be a Bigfoot because he said he would sit there and go fish, and he'd slap his face in the water and come up with fish every time, and then he'd look at him with a big smile and go, goody goo goo. I was like, all right. Goody goo goo. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's good, clean humor. About Bigfoot.
And that's the last time Eddie Murphy had some good, clean humor. No, I'm kidding.
Yep. And we got some good, clean radio for you with the
conclusion
of the security agent from Suspense.
And now, we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage, Parley Bear and Howard McNear, starring in tonight's production, The Security Agent. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Well, I should be happier if I could understand the joke as well.
I'm sorry, Joseph. You see, they think that they assigned Vladimir to take the trip to Prague, but after I told him of our plan, he was the one who suggested that I was not a fit representative and that he would accompany me. It was Vladimir's idea.
You're a party member?
They think so. He agreed it is possible. You see, Joseph, I'm not so foolish. Here is a man younger than us. He thinks it can be done.
I think it can, yes.
Won't be easy, but with a little luck. Here, I brought a map. I'll show you. Now, here, this is the route of our flight to Prague. We're in Krakow here. We fly west to Prague. Here. Now, the closest point to Austria is approximately here at Kolin, some 75 to 80 miles from the border. Just before we reach there, that is the time we take over the plane.
But what if the pilot sends out a radio alarm? Won't they send up Czech fighters?
It's a chance we have to take. I don't think they'd shoot us down anyway. There'll be too many important people going to the exhibition.
And if each of us handles our assignments correctly, they'll send no messages. Well, Joseph,
I can't talk you out of it.
No, my mind's made up. I'm going.
All right. Then I have to come with you.
They talked and made their plans far into the night. They knew that it might be unwise to be seen together after that until they boarded the plane. It was agreed that only two guns would be carried, and both of these by Haleski, who, as a party member, would be least likely to be searched. Once on the plane, a gun would be given to Zhilonko, and the other retained by Haleski. Ostrovsky, by his own admission, unused to firearms, would act as liaison between the two men once the plane had been taken over.
You, Frederick, will keep the passengers in their seats. As far as I know, the plane won't be full, probably 20, possibly 30, but no more. We'll know that in a day or two. Now, I'll take care of the pilot's cabin. Ostrovsky, it'll be up to you to help Frederick with the passengers.
I'd feel better if Joseph had a gun, too. 20 or 30 people aren't going to be easy to watch.
We can't risk one of you carrying a gun. If you search, we're finished before we even take off.
All right.
Well, then I think there's no more to be said. Good luck to us all.
Good luck.
Good luck.
The next 3 days went slowly. Now that the decision had been made, Zhilonko became increasingly wary. On his way to work on Monday, he had the feeling that he was being followed, but dismissed the thought as due to his nerves. He carefully avoided any words with Haleski at the radio station, although he saw him 2 or 3 times that day. On Tuesday, both Zhilonko and Haleski were called to the manager Korzhon's office for instructions concerning the radio broadcast schedule at the Prague exhibition. On their way out, in an empty corridor, Haleski passed a note to Zhilonko and walked downstairs to his office. The note read,
State security agent will be on board plane with us. I don't know his identity, but we'll try to find out. No reason to think they suspect us. Probably only routine precaution, but be careful. Behave normally. Destroy this immediately.
Zhilonko went into the lavatory and burned the note. On his way home that night, once again he had the feeling that he was being followed. On Thursday, the day before he was to leave, Zhilonko wrote a letter to his uncle in Warsaw, a man for whom he had great respect and love. He said, in part,
You will, I think, understand why I'm doing this. Perhaps there are many of us here in Poland who will agree with me, and others who might think I am a coward, and that if I feel so strongly about freedom, I should stay here and fight for it at home. My dear uncle, if I can accomplish any small thing in the free world, it will be to say the things that need to be said about what is happening here. This, I am convinced, I am more fitted for than taking up the battle on the home front. I fear I would only end up before a firing squad. I have no illusions about my strength as an underground agent. Either I am too afraid or too conscious of my own inadequacies if I stay. I would never be able to fight. I have never been able to. That is why I must leave Poland. Someday, I hope that I shall be able to see you again, as you are the last of my living family. In any event, I shall think of you often, as I trust you will of me, kindly. You must burn this letter, as I should not want you to be involved in the event that I am either caught or that I escape. With fondest regards, your nephew, Frederick.
On Friday morning, in the second week of June, the sleek transport plane began loading passengers at the Krakow airport. Among the passengers were Frederick Zhilonko, Joseph Ostrovsky, and Vladimir Haleski. There was another man who walked out to the loading ramp behind Zhilonko.
Zhilonko, wait!
Comrade Korzhon.
A little surprise, huh?
A pleasant one.
To tell the truth, I have no right to make this trip, but I thought it would be nice to get away for a few days, so at the last minute, I had it arranged. My wife is furious. Of course, my presence at the exhibition completely will be unofficial, you understand. You won't give me away, will you?
I wouldn't dream of it, Comrade Korzhon. What do you think?
The about Corjon?
I don't know.
Surely he couldn't be the security agent.
Doubtful, but possible.
Do you think he's come along to keep an eye on us?
Either that or to drink some good Czech beer.
Can you see Joseph?
He's four seats behind us. Now stop worrying. When I give the signal, he'll follow us forward toward the pilot's cabin. Don't worry.
You'd better give me my gun now.
Fold your newspaper over your lap. Open it up a bit more. All right. Here.
I feel better now.
Let's hope you don't have to use it.
How much longer do you think?
40 minutes.
Relax, sit back. Well, I'm worried about that security agent. Supposing he knows.
How can he? Did you tell anybody?
No.
Did Joseph?
Oh, I'm sure not.
Then?
Vladimir.
Hmm?
I did tell one person.
What?
Yesterday, I wrote a letter to my uncle.
Oh, you fool. How could you do such a thing?
I wanted to say goodbye.
You said goodbye, all right. One or the other of you, that's certain.
Yes, but he couldn't have got the letter yet.
Well, it's too late now. If security intercepted that letter, we'll know soon enough.
It was stupid, wasn't it?
Yes, it was stupid. Better shut up. Corjon's watching us. We shouldn't be too friendly.
The plane flew at 10,000 feet over the Czech border. 26 passengers looked down to earth as the announcement was made. And although there was no difference, each thought that he noticed a change in the landscape as the invisible line was crossed. Corjon moved down the aisle with a glass of vodka in his hand. He smiled benignly at Zhilonko, at Haleski.
Well, this is more like it, huh? Away from the humdrum everyday turmoil of the station. Anyway, Lucky, imagine how many would like to be doing this. Will you join me, gentlemen? A drink?
Well, no, thank you. I'm not used to airplanes.
Haleski?
I think not, comrade. It's too early for me.
Oh, well, we make up for it in Prague, huh?
He moved away, pink-cheeked, affable, and Zhilonko wondered what his friend Joseph Ostrovsky was thinking and felt sorry for him because he had to sit alone, without a gun. In his seat, Ostrovsky was thinking of Zhilonko and wishing that it was all over. Then they were 10 minutes away from the point where they would make their attempt. Zhilonko became increasingly nervous.
Look here. Supposing there's more than one security agent. They carry guns. I might not be able to hold them off.
You'll have to.
They can't know about us. They can't. They'd never have allowed us to get on the plane. Don't you think?
With the security police, I've learned it's better not to try to guess. You never know.
How will you know the pilot's flying the right course to Austria?
I told you I'll know. I can fly a plane. Now stop it. You're beginning to make me nervous.
I'm sorry. How much more time?
9 minutes.
Zhilonko tried to count the seconds and watched them grow into minutes. And suddenly it was time. He felt an elbow nudge his side and he reached into his pocket for the cold comfort of the gun. His mouth was dry and he was very afraid. The two men slowly walked forward to the pilot's compartment. And a moment later, they were joined by Ostrovsky.
All right, I'm going in now. Don't show your gun until you have to, Frederick. And for heaven's sake, try not to use it. Good luck.
Yes, good luck. Well, Joseph, it's happening.
I know.
How do you feel?
Sick. There's still time to stop this, you know.
Not now. Joseph, that fellow in the third seat back, I don't like the way he's... He might be the one. The security agent.
Everybody's looking at us. The attendant will be along in a minute. We're not supposed to be standing here.
I wonder what's happening in there.
In the pilot's cabin, Vladimir Haleski had worked very quickly. With the pistol butt, he had knocked out the radio operator and was covering the pilot and co-pilot. His orders were terse and to the point.
We've taken over the plane. There are more of us taking care of the passengers. You will change your course to the south. If you do as I say, you will not be harmed. If you try to be clever, I'll shoot. I know how to fly this plane, so please don't force me to prove it. We wish to land in Austria. You can make for Krems or Vienna. After we land, you can do as you wish. Stay with us or go on your way. That's up to you. Change course. Now, please.
Upon the other side of the compartment, Shalunko and Ostrovsky waited, and they felt the plane begin to swing around. The passengers became aware of it, too.
What's the matter? Why are we turning?
Now we see if there's trouble.
Don't take out your gun, Frederick. Leave it in your pocket.
I've got
to. Listen to me, my friend. I've got a gun. You feel it. Now, please don't do anything. You are, my dear friend. And I don't want you to be hurt. I tried to stop you from doing this.
Joseph.
I want to save you because you're my friend. That's why I didn't stop you before. I couldn't let you know. But it's still not too late. Now, help me to take Helsinki, and no one needs to know about you.
You, the security police.
I know what they will do to you. For our friendship, please, please.
You might as well kill me now, Joseph.
Shalunko, what's happening? What's going on? Do you know anything about this?
We're flying to Austria.
Austria? What are you talking about? What do you mean by...
It doesn't matter anymore.
Well, I'm going to put a stop to this.
No, don't go in there. There's another...
It is questionable, as the cabin door was open, which of them fired first, Shalunko or Ostrovsky. The fact remains that one of them was hit and the other was not. Three weeks later, two men met in a hospital room in Vienna. The one, lying thin and pale in bed, was Joseph Ostrovsky. The other, his good friend Frederick Shalunko.
Well, Joseph, how are you?
Better, thank you.
I'm sorry that I hurt you.
If you had not, you'd be dead now.
Yes, I suppose so. You'll be going back soon?
As soon as I can get up.
Yes. Will they do anything to you?
I don't know. They might. But I have to go back.
Why?
Because I must.
You could stay here. Find asylum with Helsinki and me.
I don't think your new friends would appreciate the fact that I've been a security agent.
Others have done it. I asked you before, Joseph. I'll ask again. Get out. Don't go back. There's nothing for you there.
We don't feel the same way about things, you and I.
Yes, we do. Otherwise, you couldn't have protected me for as long as you did, knowing the way I felt. Don't you understand? Joseph, please, don't go back. I'll do everything I can to help.
I'll think about it.
Suspense, in which Parley Bear and Howard McNear starred on tonight's presentation of The Security Agent. Is produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Anthony Ellis. You have heard The Security Agent, written by Mr. Ellis for Suspense. The music was composed and conducted by Jerry Goldsmith. Featured in the cast were John Daner, Herb Butterfield, and Harry Bartell.
The fact that you meet all of your responsibilities as an adult will in no way keep you from enjoying the magic and charm of fantasies like The Hither and Thither of Danny Dither. Written originally as a children's opera, The Hither and Thither of Danny Dither is graced with music by Alex North and tells what happens when an efficiency expert decides to streamline heaven. For another delightful excursion into the unusual, be sure to hear The Hither and Thither of Danny Dither this Friday night when the CBS Radio Workshop is on the air on most of these same stations.
In the front
Stay
door.
Tuned now for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed on most of these same stations by My Son Jeep.
Jeep, 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 Jeep.
Is that you, Jeep?
America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
He wanted an Edsel, but could only afford a Jeep.
Son of a gun! like a barge.
This is where the 5 minutes of news went, I think.
Yeah, something like that. But, gang, no problemo. You got Itty House Radio, and you got maybe a little extra wisdom from our last tale. Itty House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Rule number one of airplane hijacking. Never hijack grounded airplane.
Sounds like the voice of experience, sir.
You are one so wise for one so young.
Yes.
Ooh, I saw.
No, we don't think of you that way. But
oh, okay. Well, I wouldn't say it to your face, but
I'd infer it.
But
something.
But
but parquet.
Butter.
It's not my fault with Mother Nature.
Yeah, you should have seen her on Friday night. You, aren't we sneaky?
I don't even know where to go with that, but okay.
Yeah, you got to be careful. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
He was doing something with Mother Nature the other day. We don't know. But all the woodland critters have never been the same. I don't know.
You can just leave them woodland critters alone. Leave them woodland critters alone. We got more radio. Yes, indeed.
We do. We do.
And since there's such a tie-in to it, we probably ought to go to Gunsmoke next.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
if you like television Gunsmoke, I think you're going to love radio Gunsmoke. It's so much grittier, and I think that William Conrad reached a depth of Dylan that Arnest never really did.
William Conrad's Matt Dillon was lonely by his own admission.
And a little, lonely.
Yeah,
yes.
And a little lonely.
But he also had the thing where he was downright vicious sometimes. Where James Arness was just always a nice guy. You know, he'd only shoot.
William
Conrad would come up and hit you from behind with the butt of his gun. You know, and hey,
yep,
keeping peace in the town.
That's right.
Yeah, just keeping peace in the town.
Now, I'm not well versed in the Gunsmoke radio program. What was there any type of relationship? Was the Kitty Miss Kitty figure in the Gunsmoke episode?
There was, and it was kind of never stated, but just kind of understood that she was kind of there for him.
Ah, okay.
We'll leave it at that. This is a family show.
It was G-rated when I saw it.
She brought him cookies.
Doug.
That's right. Wait. Is that a metaphor, Dave?
Damn you, PG rating.
Was that a metaphor, Dave?
Not necessarily, but, you know, it's whatever kind of cookies you want it to be.
Is that code?
It could be metaphorically. It could be chocolate chip. It could be Oreos, any kind of cookie you want.
Mm. How about a Miss Kitty cookie?
Okay, better roll the show, Dale.
It purrs.
Better roll the show, Dale.
It purrs when you eat it. All right, let's go on.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Duck's Revenge. Featuring, of course, our birthday boy himself, Mr. Howard McNear. This one was originally broadcast
January 8th, 1956.
Episode number 196.
Gunsmoke, brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed, thanks to Accuray. They satisfy the most.
Oh, yes.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Starring William Conrad, the transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Oh.
Chester, you going out on a sick call?
I don't usually carry my bag when I'm going for a beer. Why, did you want something?
Oh, no. I just thought I'd stop by.
Well, you can walk with me at the stable if you want to. I'm going out to Jake Morrison's. His boy has the ague.
Oh, now, ain't that a shame? Seems like everybody's getting the ague these days. Had a test myself last week.
Oh, that's so?
You know, most folks swear by Osgood's Calagog. But I found me some new stuff. Mm. Professor Curtis's original Mameluke liniment.
Mameluke?
Look, it says right here on the bottle what it's good for. Guaranteed to cure cramps, pains in the joints, sore throat, frosted feet, rheumatism, lumbago, old sores, bites of insects and reptiles, mange, salt, rheum, dysentery, diarrhea, and cholera.
Well, a regular medical arsenal all in one bottle. Hmm. And it's doing you good, isn't it?
Well, of course, Doc.
Well, then how come you're still walking around like a buffalo with ringbone?
Well, maybe I still got just...
Oh, so you come to me for some free advice now, didn't you? Well, I'll just give you some free advice. Chester, stop eating all that salt pork and dried beans.
What?
And put some fresh greens in your stomach.
Why?
And stay away from the saloons for a few days.
Oh, now, Doc, a little whiskey and sugar never...
Oh, a little whiskey. And most important, take all those patent medicines you got and use them for cleaning your boots.
Oh,
they're just the thing to kind of toughen up the leather. And as far as I'm concerned now, Chester, you can...
What's the matter, Doc? Doc, what is it? Something about that fellow that just rode by?
Yes, Chester.
Well, you were staring like you seen a ghost.
You go ahead, Chester. I'm going back to the office.
The office? What for?
To get my gun.
Your gun? Why?
I'm going to kill that man.
Packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
The more perfectly packed your cigarette, the more taste and mildness are released for you. Chesterfield, made by exclusive Accuray, has an open, easy drawer that unlocks all the pleasure of fine tobaccos. Now, Accuray ensures an even distribution of tobacco from one end of your Chesterfield to the other. Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. Buy Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Dillon.
Yeah, what's the trouble, Chester?
You better come on out the plaza. Maybe you can stop him.
I'll stop who?
Doc. He's going to kill a man.
Doc?
Doc, yes, sir. He's gone and got his old army walker and strapped it to his belt, and he's marching up Front Street looking for the fellow, whoever he is.
All right, let's go.
I tried my best to stop him, but he wouldn't listen. Oh, you should have saw his face, Mr. Dillon. He means business. I never seen Doc like this.
So was the fellow, Chester.
I never seen him before.
Well, you know what it's all about?
No, sir, but I do know one thing. I'd hate to have to face that old walker pistol, even if 'tis an old cap and ball. Why, it'd blow a hole clean through a buffalo.
Matt. Oh, wait a minute. It's Kitty at the door of the long branch.
She's waving. He must be down there.
Yeah, come on.
Matt, it's Doc.
Is he in there, Kitty?
Yeah, and he's got a gun. He's threatening some man.
All right, thanks, Kitty.
And if you won't come outside, I'll kill you where you stand.
I told you I'm not going to fight you.
That's up to you. But I'm going to kill you whether you defend yourself or not.
Doc. That's enough.
Matt, you stay out of this.
Happens to be my business, Doc, when a man threatens another man in this town. When the other man doesn't want to fight, won't defend himself, it could turn out to be murder.
You think I don't know that?
You must want to kill him pretty bad.
I've wanted to for a lot of years.
Why?
I've got good reasons, Matt.
But you won't tell me, huh?
No.
All right, what about you? I could say I don't know, but I'm just a stranger passing through town. But I know. There's no good reason for murder. I guess he thinks there is. Do you? Not many men would say yes to that, now would they, Marshal? But you won't defend yourself, huh? I won't draw with him, no. If he's going to shoot me, he'll have to take the consequences. I'm not a fighting man, Marshal. I'm a miner. Me and my partner here, we're just traveling through Dodge. We don't want any trouble.
That's right, Marshal. We made our strike out in Arizona territory, and we're headed back for St. Louis. Oh, we was just minding our own business, having a quiet drink when this fella comes along.
What's your name?
Clem Maddow. This is Ben Bartlett, my partner. We don't want no trouble.
You won't have any. Go on back to your drink.
I'm going
to
kill him one way or the other, Matt. And you can't stop me.
Look, Doc, you're taking an awful lot for granted. Maybe you think I won't throw you in jail for threatening murder. Maybe you think because you're the town's only doctor that you can get away
with... Listen.
No, you listen to me. You're forgetting a lot you ought to remember, Doc. For instance, your position in this town. You ought to be setting an example instead of acting like an ordinary gun hand. And more important, your responsibility. Another man's life may be his own risk, but yours belongs to this whole town. And a good many lives depend on you. So you calm down and you put that gun away.
Hey, you sure told the old fool off.
You shut up! Matto. I don't know anything about you. Maybe you're what you say, but if Doc doesn't like you, that's good enough for me. So you get out of Dodge while you got a whole skin. And you stay out.
Why should we? We got a right...
And you take your partner with you, Maddow, because I don't like him.
Sure, Marshal. We was going on tomorrow anyways. We
We'll ride on tonight as soon as we stock up on some grub.
All right.
Where did Doc go, Chester?
Well, up the street, probably back to the office like you said to
me. Matt, look on his face when he went out.
Yeah, I know, Kitty. Well, I'm going up there.
Matt, you had to do it.
Yeah. I'll see you later, Kitty.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Dillon, that Maddo, he didn't seem like such a bad fellow.
No, he didn't, Chester.
I'd sooner believe bad of that partner of his, that Bartlett. That one seemed like he could be a hard case, all right, thought half trying. But Maddo wouldn't even defend himself.
No. But I don't think that was because he was afraid to.
No, that's true. Seemed more like he just didn't want to fight Doc. Didn't seem mad at all like Doc. More like he was sad.
Maybe a man with a guilty conscience, Chester.
Mm. Yeah, I guess so, Mr. Dillon.
You better go on over to the office, Chester, huh? I want to go up alone.
Yes, sir.
Doc. Huh. Now I wonder where he could have gone.
He didn't show up at Delmonico's for his supper, and it's way past his usual time. I've been watching the office, and his light ain't come on. Of course, he could be sitting up there in the dark.
I just tried again. He's not there.
Mr. Dillon, you don't reckon he might have just left town?
Run away? Because of what I said? Not Doc. He's too bullheaded for that. Most likely, he's out there somewhere with an old pistol of his looking for Maddo.
I'm afraid you're right. Doggone it, I don't know what this town would do without Doc. He can be awful irritating at times and all, but... Hey, that was a shot.
Yeah, come on.
Marshal! Marshal! Over here!
It's that Bartlett, Mr. Dillon.
It's Clem, Marshal. I think he's dead.
All right. Everybody stay back. Give me that lantern, will you?
He was shot in the back, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah.
It looks mighty bad.
He said he'd kill him, and he's done it.
Did you see who did it, Bartlett?
No. We was loading horses, and I just turned to go back into the store for another load, and I heard the shot.
Anybody else around to see it?
No, but... After all, Marshal, can't be much doubt who did it, can there? Everybody in town heard him threaten to kill Clem. And just because the man's a doctor doesn't give him any right to go around murdering people.
That's enough, Bartlett. The important thing right now is to try to save this man's life.
Where are we taking him at, Mr. Dillon?
There's only one place, Chester.
Yes, sir.
Now, where have you been, Doc?
I was down by the stable. And I heard a shot.
It's Maddo. He's still alive. But he was shot in the back.
Oh. I see.
As if you didn't know.
Doc, I can understand you getting into a fair fight, but not shooting a man in the back.
Why, you just gonna let him walk away like that, Marshal?
Doc! He's gonna die if he doesn't get attention right away, and you're the only doctor in town. You gonna let him die?
Where do you think I was going, Matt? Bring him up to the office. I'll have everything ready. Mm-hmm.
pleasure packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
The more perfectly packed your cigarette, the more taste and mildness are released for you. Chesterfield, made by exclusive Accuray, has an open, easy drawer that unlocks all the pleasure of fine tobaccos. Now, Accuray ensures an even distribution of tobacco from one end of your Chesterfield to the other. Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. Buy Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Come heck, high water, or even bad internet connection, Ziri House Radio.
I can think of things more perfectly packed than a cigarette, but I can't talk about it here.
No, I could, but let's not. Damn you, PG rating. Damn you. Which we do have. You can set up your Blog Talk channel to be the rating that you wish it to be, and that's what we did.
That's true. Yeah, GZ Sci Papers listening and enjoying this episode of Gunsmoke. I really like the Gunsmokes. I haven't listened to a lot of them in a while, but I used to listen to them almost every night for quite some time. I think I'll be tuning some more in coming up. They're just so gritty, and in reality, there weren't any more than 12 murders a year in the original Dodge City. Unlike, it seems like sometimes there's 12 murders an episode, but it doesn't have to be real. This is radio.
Yep, somebody let Howard McNear go a little crazy here in this episode, or so it seems.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because, you know, you were saying how, you know, before we went on, how Howard McNear usually plays kind of a, I don't want to say wussy, but kind of an effeminate type character. He's not effeminate in this one.
No, not at all. Yeah. He's quite angry.
Quite angry.
Surly. But he is going to the operating room, but what's he planning on doing there?
Chop, chop, shoo!
There you go.
Gesundheit.
Into little pieces.
Okay,
go ahead.
What is he playing, Doc, in this, or is he playing the Festus character?
No, he's Doc. He's Doc, and Festus is the Parley Bear. Was in the last one.
Oh, okay.
John Daner is that other guy that they don't like, the one that is screaming how Doc killed, shot him, which, you know, of course, not been proven yet.
That's right.
Right.
You know what I thought when I heard this part here? I said, why didn't Matt take Doc's gun to smell if it had been fired recently?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to say something, and I don't want it to be taken in the wrong way, but, you know, back in those days, crime detection, you know, he might have had to lick some musket balls to figure out which one was fired. Hello. Anyway. What you doing here, Matt? Licking musket ball. What? It's a conspiracy.
I hope there's not a Carpenter's song coming up next. We've got more.
Rainy days and Sundays, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I was concerned with. Whole lot of radio.
Whole lot of radio.
Yeah.
Whole lot of radio.
Whole lot.
Blah, blah.
We will play the radio until your ears bleed. It'll be that good.
We're here all night, folks.
Try the corned beef. Whatever that means.
Time for part two there.
I think so. Let's wrap up our episode.
Exciting conclusion,
Gun.
Right?
Smoke.
Yeah, and some polka. That would be fun, too.
Thank you.
going to pull through, Doc?
I don't know. I've done all I can.
Ah, good.
You really didn't have to stand here and watch, man.
I know I didn't, Doc. That's not why I stayed. I thought maybe I could help. And I wanted this.
The bullet?
Yeah, that's right. You see, Doc, I knew you didn't shoot Matto, but I had to be able to prove it.
How did you know?
Because Matto was shot in the back. I tried to tell you out there, Doc, only you didn't understand.
Oh.
But you did have me kind of worried when you started to walk away from him.
Why, it never occurred to me to walk away from him. I guess being a doctor is a lot more important than any personal grudge. Well, I reckon I'm under suspicion, aren't I?
Doc, look at this .45 bullet. Took it out of Matto's chest. Now, it couldn't have been shot from that old pistol of yours, could it?
No. I guess it couldn't. Well, then who did it?
Well, that's not hard to figure. Oh, Bartlett, Chester, you can come in now.
How is he, Marshal?
I think he's going to be all right.
He ain't going to die? Say, that's mighty fine. Well, I was plenty scared with this man operating and all.
You needn't have worried. He's a doctor and a good one. You see, he didn't shoot your partner.
He didn't?
No, we have the proof for that.
Who did?
Now, there's only one other man in town who'd have had any reason to. A coward who saw a golden opportunity to double his takings of a mining strike by shooting his partner in the back. You just keep your hands away from your belt, Bartlett.
Well, I did. Want me to get his gun, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, Chester.
Well, you're crazy, Marshal. You can't prove this.
I think we can, Bartlett. Anyway, we'll just wait and see. All right, take him down and lock him up, Chester.
Yes, sir. Come on, you.
Doc, looks like Matto's going to come, too.
Yes, maybe. His color's better. You know, it's funny. I don't hate him anymore.
You mind telling me why you ever did?
It happened a long time ago. It had to do with a girl who they're both pretty fond of. She chose Matto, but he jilted her. She drowned herself. I swore I'd kill him. And I carried that hate in my heart all these years. That's not good for a man.
No, it's not, Doc.
Well, you brought me to my senses, Matt, in that saloon. Thank you.
Well, I looked all over for you afterwards.
Well, I guess I was out of Jake Morrison's. I remembered I had to treat his boy for the ague, so I did.
Doc?
Oh, yes. Yes, Clint. Now you just take it easy. That's right. You lie still. You're going to be all right.
Doc, I wanted to tell you I'm awful sorry for what happened. Maybe sorrier than you. I loved her. I would have come back if I could have.
Well, I guess I never even thought of that.
Well, we've both been sorry too long. It's all over now. Thanks.
Now you just go on to sleep. You get your rest there now. And the world will look a lot better to you tomorrow. That's it. That's it.
Well, good night, Doctor.
Good night, man.
Moment, our star, William Conrad.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
Chesterfield, made by exclusive Accuray, packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. Unlocks all the pleasure of fine tobaccos.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
Firm and pleasing to the lips. Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most. You know, cowboys with 6 months' trail pay made the frontier a good place for a crooked gambler. Next week, one comes to town and gets cured of his bad habits the hard way. And that was the West. Good night.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The special music for Gunsmoke was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Vic Perrin and John Daner. Parley Bear is Chester, Howard McNair is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Make today your big red letter day, your L&M red letter day. Superior taste and filter, it's the miracle tip. Make today your big red letter day, change to L&M today.
L&M's got everything.
Superior taste.
And superior filter.
Get L&M today.
This is it. L&M, superior taste and filter. L&M, America's best filter tip cigarette. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story of the Western Frontier when Matt Dillon, Chester Proudfoot, Doc, and Kitty, together with all the other hard-living citizens of Dodge, will be with you once more. It's America growing west in the 1870s. It's Gunsmoke.
Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
We have two morals for this one. Here we go with number one. Being righteous doesn't always mean you're right.
That's right. No sound effect. All right. We're having a few technical issues tonight.
He had another moral.
He
had another moral.
I got another one.
Quick.
Okay, here we go.
Another moral? A second moral?
Yep. A second moral?
Yes.
Are you very moral,
tonight?
Me?
All
right.
I am.
Erie House Radio proudly presents a surprise second moral of the story.
The responsible man is too busy to be caught up in the razzle dazzle. There you go.
Just for that, do three.
Uh-oh. Don't look at me.
Now a surprise for Gar. Serious House Radio proudly presents another moral of the story, part three.
When in doubt, punt!
There you go. Yeah, due to some technical issues, we will not be having a after party tonight. Blog Talk or something went wonky today, so after the show, that's pretty much it. There won't be the after party in the archives. It's just a little two-hour thing we do. I know. I should have thought
with all those cigarette
way.
Commercials, with all those cigarette commercials they had in Gunsmoke, it could have been called Gun Smoker.
Yeah.
It could have been.
I should have broken the news this way. Sadly, technical issues. There will not be bonus material after the live show tonight. All right, stop your whining. we get along so famously. More Howard McNear coming your way in just a few moments with a wrap-up story from The Whistler.
The Whistler.
Whistler.
The Whistler.
The Whistler.
Whistler.
The Whistler whistles.
Get my whistle already. Get my whistle already.
You have to wet it first, the whistle, that is.
I don't have to go that bad.
No, Whistler, not...
Oh.
Whistler.
I thought you said
Clarence
the Whistler. Yeah.
I'm dancing on the minefield tonight, I'll tell you. Engar sprung a leech.
All right.
We'll apply a little tar or nicotine and fix him right up.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Right.
Seal it up. Pump it up. Have a good day. Have a good day.
All righty. The Whistler. This one's going to be entitled The Gentle Way. Ooh.
Oh.
I wonder who's in it. Why, I bet Howard McNear is.
Ooh.
Anyone else?
Rin-tin-tin.
No, Rinty is not in this one.
Oh.
No.
Could have been.
Right.
He might have been. He just was uncredited. Yep. He was uncredited, yeah.
Could have slipped them in.
Anybody that is credited of note besides Howard McNear?
Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah. Also uncredited.
Yeah.
Also uncredited.
Yeah.
And Thurl Reeve.
Him and Rin Tin Tin.
And Rin Tin Tin.
Yeah.
The Gentle Way, originally broadcast
June 23rd, 1947.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. But first, an important announcement. There will be no Whistler next Monday.
The next Whistler will come to you a week from Wednesday, July 2nd, and every Wednesday thereafter. Same hour, same station. Only the day will change. Remember, instead of Monday, the Whistler will come to you on Wednesdays hereafter. And now the Whistler's strange story. The Gentle Way. The clock on the white wall showed a 11:45. A half hour since Bruce Reimer had arrived in response to the summons. He was nervous now, unable to concentrate any longer on the scientific journals on the table beside his chair. It wasn't like Dr. Fenshaw to keep him waiting this way. And something in the man's voice had told him there was important news. That for the first time in the 11 years since Bruce Reimer had come to the Barker Institute of Biological Research, he was about to get a break. And it had been a long time coming. Yes, Reimer was a patient man. But there were moments during those 11 years when it looked like the breaks would never come. When he was forced to stand on the sidelines, smile politely, and congratulate the new, younger man who came and worked and picked the fat promotion. But he felt now that it had come. That now, at long last, Dr. Fenshaw, chairman of the board, had decided it was Reimer's turn.
Would you come in, Reimer?
Yes, of course, Dr. Fenshaw.
Sorry to have kept you waiting, Reimer.
Not at all.
Let's see now. You're still working on tobacco mosaic, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
How's it coming?
Well, we seem to be making some progress.
Good. Jules Emery working with you?
No, not at the moment. He started out with us in the field, but he's on a research problem of his own now.
Oh? What's that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. I do know he was tremendously excited by Holzer's paper on toxins. Wanted to do some advanced work on Holzer's premise.
Emery's a brilliant research man. Pretty unstable, though. Inclined to go off half-cocked. Sit down, Reimer.
Oh, thanks.
Now, I presume you know Richardson has resigned as administrator.
Yes, I read about it in the papers.
Sick man. Job took too much out of him. We are faced now with finding a replacement.
Yes, sir?
We've always been pleased with your work, Reimer.
Well, that's very gratifying.
I've just spoken to Cardigan about you.
Cardigan? Why, he's in New York with the Manhattan Foundation.
Of course. He recommended you very highly.
Well, what is Cardigan to do with...
He's returning to us as the new administrator, Reimer. You will be his assistant. It's not official yet, of course, but I thought you'd be pleased to know.
Yes. Yes, naturally, I'm pleased, Dr. Fenshaw. Very pleased.
So it's happened again, Reimer. And of all people, it had to be Cardigan, who twice now has moved past you into executive positions you wanted and deserved. Cardigan the charmer, the diplomat, the fair-haired boy. Yes, Reimer, of all of them, it had to be Cardigan. The hatred for Cardigan was there from the moment you met him 10 years ago, Reimer. You sensed from the beginning that he had more poise, more talent, more integrity than you, that he was a better man for any job, and you hated him for it. Yes, and it's during those next few days, at a point you can't even place, that the hatred welds itself into something more concrete, into a decision to kill Cardigan with an unusual murder instrument, in a clean, efficient way which could leave no trace. And the weapon you've chosen, Bruce, is a man, a highly temperamental human being named Jules Emery.
Busy, Jules?
Bruce, come here a minute. Take a look in the microscope here.
Oh, what's this?
A culture. Recognize it?
No.
Bacillus botulinus. 24 hours ago, it was something else. This fluid in the test tube here.
I see. But what are you...
Don't you see, Reimer? That's exactly what Holzer tried to prove. This toxin is simply a stage in the life cycle of the bacillus.
Well, you're certain of this?
As certain as I'm standing here. I tell you, Bruce, this is going to change the whole concept of toxins.
You told Cardigan about it?
I will in a week or two. As soon as I can have my notes typed up.
I wouldn't if I were you.
Why do you say that?
Oh, I don't know. You and Cliff Cardigan, pretty good friends?
Well, not especially. Why?
Well, somehow I had the impression you'd known him for a long time, long before you came to the Institute.
Well, he used to go with my wife before we were married.
Oh, that explains it.
Explains what?
And what he told the board of directors when... Oh. Oh, silly. Anyhow, congratulations on this, Jules. Well, I don't...
Wait a minute. What did Cardigan tell the board?
Let's forget it.
Oh, Bruce, will you stop talking in riddles? What are you getting at?
Well, it's only a rumor, but do you remember when Cardigan left a year ago to go to Manhattan Foundation and you were up for administrator here?
I was up for administrator?
Well, I thought you knew.
No.
Huh. Anyway, you'd have had it if Cardigan hadn't pulled for Richardson. At least that's what I've heard.
You mean he stopped me from getting it?
Oh, don't say it's true, Jules.
And Richardson was an outsider, a stranger.
That's why I say it's probably only a rumor. After all, Cardigan's a friend of yours. Or, anyway, a close friend of your wife.
Well, I was never told I was even being considered.
Well, of course, you knew it this time, didn't you?
No.
Well, that's funny. Well, I heard you were to be administrator and I was to be your assistant. Then Cliff Cardigan came back to town...
Deliberately to take the appointment from me, is that
it? Now, take it easy, Jules. That had nothing to do with it. Cardigan simply told me he was lonesome in New York, so he came back. It seems he had a friend here. Some young lady. Oh, but I talk too much. See you at lunch, Jules.
Bruce?
Yes?
You don't think that... Oh, nothing. Forget it.
All right. And Jules, you forget it too, will you?
With the prologue of The Gentle Way, the Signal Oil Company is bringing you another strange story by The Whisper. But now a prediction about a sight you're going to see oftener and oftener as the days grow warmer. Overheated cars parked at the side of the road to let their steaming radiators cool off. To make sure this annoying occurrence doesn't mar your summer driving fun, Signal service stations have three little items that will make your cooling system young again. The first is radiator cleaner to remove clogging sludge and rust. The second is rust preventive to protect radiators of old cars or new ones from future corrosion. And the third is radiator sealer that stops any small leaks in a jiffy. Now, these, incidentally, are just a few of your Signal dealer's fine quality upkeep items that include fan belts, radiator hoses, spark plugs, and, of course, Lee of Conshohocken Tires, famous for 45 years as the finest of first-line tires. You see, Signal service stations are much more than places to buy Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline and Signal premium motor oil. Wherever you see Signal's circle sign in yellow and black, there you'll also find complete, conscientious Signal service to help your car run better, look better, and last longer. And now back to the Whistler.
It was like planting a seed, wasn't it, Bruce? The casual remarks you dropped to Jules Emery. And you could sense as you talked to him that the seed had dropped in fertile ground. That the doubts you left in his mind would soon be suspicions. That with the right care, the seed would strike root and grow into a raging hate for Cliff Cardigan that could transform Jules Emery into a murder weapon. And the beauty of it all, Bruce, is that you've taken the gentle way. And in the eyes of the law, you're an innocent bystander. It's only a few days after Cardigan takes over his post as administrator that you see an opportunity for move number two.
Cardigan, what's this about Fairfield? You were saying...
Just a second. Here, may I have a cigar?
Oh, thanks.
All right. Got it. Well, there we are. Bruce, it seems the fruit growers around Fairfield are pretty hard hit with scale this year. Thought I'd send someone down there to make a survey. What do you think about lions?
Well, how long will it take?
Oh, a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks. Well, the lions is okay. But I'd suggest Jules Emery. Poor guy can stand a little fresh air. Been shut up in his laboratory for weeks working on that toxin theory of his.
Toxin?
Botulinus. Seems to hit something important. Do him good to get away for a while.
Well, if you think so. Tell him he leaves at the end of the week.
Well, it'll be better if you'd tell him. He's been here a long time, you know. I think he rather resents taking orders from me.
Well, that's odd.
I tell you what. I'm getting a little dinner at my apartment tomorrow evening. Why don't you come along? Both Jules Emery and his wife are coming.
Well, fine, Bruce. I'll be happy to come. Be nice to see Grace again. She and I went to high school together, you know. We'll have a lot to talk about.
Yes. Yes, I imagine you will.
And then remember me trying to tell your folks the car really did run out of gas on the way home from the country club dance?
I never did believe that.
And I don't believe it either. Here, you better have another cocktail.
Oh, no thanks, Bruce. I haven't finished this one.
She can't talk and drink at the same time like I do. Thanks.
And Jules?
Huh? No thanks, Bruce.
Jules is thinking about his work again. Come on now, relax,
forget
darling.
Forget your botulinus toxin for once, Jules. Well, Grace, here's to the dear dead days beyond recall.
Excuse me.
Hmm? Was that the phone?
Oh, I didn't hear anything.
Well, I'd better check. Help yourself if you get thirsty.
Well, what happened in New York, Cliff?
Oh, wonderful city. Had an interesting job, nice salary, met some important people, but...
But what?
Oh, I guess my heart belongs right here.
Ever going back?
No, too lonesome. Mind if I smoke, Grace?
Of course not.
Have a cigar, Jules?
I don't smoke cigars.
Nonsense. Go ahead, try one.
I don't want to encourage a habit I can't afford, Cardigan. You see, I don't have a nice salary. I'm not a big shot who runs around with millionaires.
Why, Jules.
Say, Cliff, is Dr. Fenshaw a personal secretary named Edith Evans?
I believe so. Why?
Well, that's funny. She says Fenshaw wants to see Jules and me at his home right away.
Well, this time of night?
Don't look at me. I don't get it either. Well, come on, Jules. Let's go.
Yes?
Dr. Fenshaw is expecting us.
But...
I'm Mr. Reimer, and this is Mr. Emmett.
But I'm very sorry, sir. But Dr. Fenshaw's not at home. He and Mrs. Fenshaw are out to dinner.
See here, Bruce. What is this?
Wait a minute. His secretary just called me. Miss Evans.
Oh, there must be some mistake, sir. His personal secretary is a man. Roger Evans.
I see. Well, thank you very much. Good night.
Oh, good night, sir. I'll tell the doctor.
Oh, no, never mind. I'll see him in the morning. Come on, Jules. Well, maybe this is somebody's idea of a joke, getting us all the way out here. Who do you suppose called me?
Why don't you ask Cardigan?
What do you mean?
It's pretty obvious, isn't it?
I'm sorry, Jules. I
He had that girl phone you, so he'd be alone with my wife.
Don't be ridiculous.
Why is it ridiculous?
Well, for one thing, if Cardigan really wanted to be alone with Grace, he could do it a lot smoother than that. He'd send you away on a field trip, for instance.
It's moving now, Reimer, of its own momentum. Yes. All you had to do was give your plan the first push and let Jules Emery take it from there. And when you and Jules arrive back at your apartment, you find both Grace and Cliff Cardigan gone. And later still, when the telephone rings,
It's a very nervous Jules who snaps up the receiver. Yes?
Oh, Jules, darling.
Grace, where are you?
I'm calling from a drugstore, dear. The car broke down. It's a fan belt or something.
Well, why did you take the car out?
Well, Cliff couldn't get a taxi, so I took him home. Jules, is something wrong?
We'll have to find out if something is wrong with Jules or not in just a few moments.
I bet there's something wrong.
I bet there is.
Who's betting? Who's betting? Who's betting? Anybody? Anybody?
Ah, there we go.
I lost the phone.
Somebody wake up guard.
I knew it was...
Somebody wake up guard.
I knew it was in the house somewhere, but...
No, don't.
I had to find the... I had to find the freaking phone.
Wow.
Where was it? Anyway. Oh, yeah. This,
oh, my.
This Whistler has all kinds of twists and turns and manipulations going on.
Yeah. This guy's trying to set the one guy to kill the other.
And we'll see what happens with that, but
that sounds like
it's fun.
Sounds like a gentle way to me, huh?
Mm-hmm. Fun.
Have the other guy do
an action pack.
Yep. Have the other guy do it. That's the gentle way to do it.
I don't care for a guy who's too lazy to commit his own murder. I mean, come on.
Well, maybe. Hadn't thought of it that way. I still don't. Thank you.
No, I think I'd be that lazy guy. We'll put this together. You know, let those two do all the tap dancing. You know, why not?
Yeah.
Blah, blah. Hey.
And I think it's probably more of a I don't want the evidence to come back to me deal than laziness.
Right. But see, that's the weird thing. For every action, there's evidence. So, there you go.
I thought you were going to give us
that's not
physics.
That's not the moral. That's just what is. What is, blah, blah, a conspiracy.
It could be immoral. Or it could be immoral.
It could. I've got a better one than that, but, yeah.
The halfway moral.
I mean,
that's a half a moral.
Yeah.
Half
the half
moral.
A moral. Yeah.
Let's wrap up the Whistler. We only got a...
Yeah, let's do
a
that.
A wee bit of time left. Here's the remainder of The Gentle Way.
The Gentle Way, Bruce. The easy, guiltless way. Yes. You couldn't have found a better weapon than Jules, could you? The following night, he arrives home unexpectedly.
Is that you, Jules?
Of course. Why? Whom did you expect, Grace?
Why, nobody. Only I thought you had an appointment with Bruce Reimer at the Institute this evening.
I did. I waited an hour for him, then he called and said he couldn't make it. By the way, who's your appointment with?
Mine.
Or are you going to tell me you dressed up just to sit around the house and wait for me?
I dressed up because I thought I'd go to a movie. Jules, what's the matter with you? Is something wrong?
You can answer that question better than I can.
I don't know what you mean, darling. Is there any reason why I shouldn't go to a movie? I do it all the time when you work late. You know that.
All right, skip it.
But, Jules...
I did skip it. Where's my pipe?
Isn't it there on the table?
If it were, I wouldn't be asking.
I'm sure it's there. Let me look.
Never mind. I found it. Here behind this vase of roses. You know, it seems to me, Grace, that with all the penny pitching we have to do... could forego buying flowers.
Oh, Jules, dear, you're in an awfully bad mood tonight. It happens I didn't buy those roses. They were sent here.
Oh, yeah? Who sent them?
It's very funny. The boy delivered the box around 6 o'clock. I didn't even know what it was. Then I opened it. There were a dozen roses. No card, no name. I haven't the slightest
notion. Oh, don't give me that.
Jules, Emery, would you tell me what on earth is wrong
with
you?
I'm not an idiot. I know who sent those roses to you. Cliff Cardigan.
Cliff? Why would
he... He did send them, didn't he?
I told you I don't know. But what if he did? I told you Cliff and I are old friends.
You can make a better choice of friends, it seems to me.
And what does that mean?
Next time you work on our budget, Next time you wonder how we're going to get along on my salary, please remember that Cliff Cardigan is the only reason I'm not administrator of Barker Institute.
Jules, how long have you been brooding on this?
Never mind that. You had a date to meet him tonight, didn't you? That's why you're all dressed up. That's why he sent you flowers.
Oh, Jules, listen to me,
boy. Oh, don't lie to me. Don't lie to me, Ron. I'll answer. Hello.
Oh, hello, Jules. This is Cardigan.
Yes?
Say, I forgot to mention it before, old boy, but I'm sending you out of town on a little field trip.
There's not much left for you to do now, is there, Bruce? As you see Jules off on the train to Fairfield the next morning, you can see that your weapon is poised, ready to strike at the innocent Cardigan. That a few days, perhaps a week alone, brooding in a drab country hotel will finish the job. There's no one to let Jules know what's happening except you. And you know how to handle that.
Telegram, sir, from Fairfield.
Oh, thank you.
Any answer?
No. No answer. Yes?
Fairfield calling. A person-to-person call for Mr. Bruce Reimer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Reimer isn't at home.
And just to make sure, Bruce, one last item. The finishing touch.
Chance World Press Association.
Oh, good evening. This is Dr. Harvey Williams of Barker Institute. I thought perhaps you might be interested in an important discovery we've made.
Why, of course, Doctor. Thank you very much.
Well, it concerns a very deadly type of toxin called botulinus.
Just a second. Who is it?
It's Jules. Jules Emery.
Jules, what in the name
of... I've got to talk to you, Bruce.
Well, it's 2 a.m. What are you doing in town?
I just got in. Where's Grace?
Grace?
Yes, where is she? What's been going on? Why didn't you answer my wire?
Well, I told you once, Jules. I don't want to become involved in your personal affairs. Questions you asked were none of my business. You aren't man enough to settle your own problem.
Never mind the lecture. Where is she?
Grace? Well, I understand she's gone to visit her mother.
You're lying. You're lying to protect her.
All I know is what Grace told me.
What about Cardigan? Where's he?
At home, I suppose.
I've been there. He isn't home.
Oh, I remember now. He went on a weekend trip.
Where?
I don't know. But I believe he said he'd be back around 5 or 6 this morning. If you're so eager to find out where he's been, why don't you wait for him?
I intend to. To see this?
What?
Take a look at the newspaper.
Cardigan taking credit?
Yes.
For...
All my work on botulinus. He says it's his discovery.
How could the paper make a mistake?
There is no mistake. It's a press association dispatch.
But how else?
Released by someone called Harvey Williams. There's no such person here. Cardigan went through my notes, Reimer. He released the story himself.
Oh, now, wait a
minute.
I've
done all the waiting I intend to do.
Well, that's a terrible accusation.
He's stolen everything from me. My job, my wife, and now this.
I can't believe...
Reimer, I'm going to kill him.
Well, Dr. Fenshaw, I didn't expect to find you here in Cardigan's office. Where's Cardigan, by the way?
Sit down, Reimer.
Huh? What's the matter?
I've been waiting for you. Something terrible has happened.
What do you mean?
Cardigan is dead.
What?
He was killed last night. Some passerby found him in front of his apartment. Cranial injuries, a blow on the head or something.
Good heavens, I just can't believe...
I know. It's left me a little shaken, too. Got a cigarette?
No, I'm sorry. I left them on my desk in my office. But Cardigan keeps some good cigars here somewhere.
No.
Oh, here they are.
No, thanks. His brand was always too strong for me. I'd pick up some cigarettes on the way downtown. Due at a meeting. Business as usual, you know.
Cardigan. Poor devil.
You may as well stay here in Cardigan's office, Reimer. Have to take over his work for the time being.
Oh, yes, of course.
Might be a week or 10 days before I can get the board together. And I'll have you officially appointed administrator.
I'll be happy to do what I can.
I appreciate that, Reimer. I'll try to look in again sometime this afternoon.
Well, Cardigan, old boy. Mind if I smoke one of your cigars? Bruce Rock. This is the administrator's office.
Is this Mr. Cardigan's office?
Yeah, it is. Bruce Reimer speaking.
Well, Mr. Reimer, you're the man I'm trying to locate. This is police headquarters. Lieutenant Owens speaking.
Yes?
We're holding a man here who's confessed to the murder of Mr. Cardigan. He says you know him. His name is Jules Emery.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending to tonight's story. Meantime, since the Whistler changes to Wednesday nights, beginning with our next broadcast, I want to make it clear just what the new schedule of the Whistler will be. There will be no Whistler next Monday. The next Whistler will come to you 1 week from this coming Wednesday on July 2nd, and every Wednesday thereafter. The hour remains the same, 8 p.m. Pacific Coast Time, 9 p.m. Mountain Time. Only the day has been changed to Wednesdays. And I might add, in appreciation of your loyalty, which has made this the most popular of all Pacific Coast programs, Signal Oil Company will continue to broadcast the Whistler without interruption throughout the summer. So be sure to tune in the Whistler for our next broadcast 1 week from this coming Wednesday. Same hour, same CBS station, and every Wednesday thereafter. And now back to the Whistler.
Yes, Bruce. It was the gentle way that did the trick. And everything you wanted is yours now, with no strings attached, no embarrassing questions, no way the law can touch you. Jules Emery is a confessed killer now. Cardigan is dead. And Dr. Fenshaw himself has promised you your appointment as administrator. And it was so easy, wasn't it? A word here, a hint there, a box of roses, a few unanswered telegrams. And here you are sitting at Cardigan's desk, smoking one of his cigars, ready to tell Lieutenant Owens how you tried to reason with Jules Emery, tried to convince him he should forget his raging jealousy and go back to Fairfield.
Go on, Lieutenant.
Well, about this guy, Jules Emery, we don't know what's wrong with him, but we're calling a doctor for a checkup.
A doctor?
Yes, he certainly tells a weird story. We're holding him on a charge of intent to murder.
Intent? But you just said he confessed.
He did. He was sure he'd murdered Cardigan. Didn't seem to know Cardigan was run down in front of his house by a hit-and-run driver.
What? I'm afraid I don't understand. How do you know it was a driver?
Because we got the driver and he confessed. The reason I called you, Mr. Ryder, you're in Cardigan's office now, aren't you?
Yes.
Emery just told us he invented some kind of deadly poison.
Botulinus.
That's it. He says one drop would kill a regiment. I just wanted to warn you.
Warn me?
Yes. Don't smoke any of Cardigan's cigars. They're full of that poison.
Oopsie. I love a happy ending.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, which will come to you every Wednesday hereafter, beginning July 2nd, 1 week from
not
this
in
coming
Deshaun year. Watson kind of way.
The Whistler is brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil,
say that
and fine quality automotive accessories. Signal has asked me to remind you to get the most driving pleasure, drive at sensible speeds, be courteous, and obey traffic regulations. It may save a life, possibly your own.
Only run over mean people.
Featured in tonight's story were Willard Waterman and Howard McNair. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen with story by Jack Hasty, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Martin Miller speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Ernie's born nine.
Ernest. We got time for a quick moral? Sure we do.
I got two of them.
Yeah, go ahead.
How many? Seven?
18.
Do them all at once. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Irony always laughs last. Never laugh at other man's rhubarb.
Yes, it was all about me. Yes, it was all about me.
Especially if it's a toxic poison. Okay,
yes, it was all about dreams.
Six times. Six bad dreams. Yes. It wouldn't stop. It was a nightmare, I tell you.
It was nightmare after nightmare after nightmare. Just like tomorrow night right here on Erie House Radio. It's all trouble in the deep. We got the shadow and high adventure.
Yeah.
Two stories. Death from the Deep and Whirlpool. That's tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern. Show ends at 8. Then what happens?
After that, I'm taking a vacation with Rin Tin Tin.
Ah, very good.
There you go. Harbahar will be on the Twitches at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you're there. So will I be. With Rin Tin Tin.
Yeah. Head on over to Gar's page, get a link, and that's right after our show here.
Rin Tin Tin and Ernest Borgnine are going to do vaudeville dancing. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Who leads?
Rin Tin Tin, you always lead. The German Shepherd always leads. That's just the way it goes.
You know what? You feed a German Shepherd, don't you?
Anything they want.
Exactly, if you're smart. or it might be part of you.
Yes. I've known a German Shepherd friend, and he was cool, but... yeah, he didn't get
kept
enough attention
sheep,
from
though, right?
Weren't any sheep. That was a...
Shepherd. What does a shepherd do? They herd sheep, hence the name, shepherd.
Well,
see you tomorrow,
you know,
6:30 Eastern, gang. We're out of here.
Castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Oh,
when
geez,
next
wait.
We meet in Frankenstone.
Hi, Chris.
Don't come alone.
Good night, whatever
can
you are.
Can you dig it?
I can dig it.
I dig it.
I can dig it. You could.
I really dig it.
All right.